Go ahead and do this thing one last time for the week. Welcome in on 104.5 The Zone. Buck Rising here with you till 1 o'clock. Lucas Panzeca making it happen behind the scenes. We got a jam-packed loaded show for you. We're basically squeezing 3 days of show into one. So buckle up. It's going to be a fun 3 hours. We got Coach Dave McGinnis of Titans Radio. He's coming up next. We have SEC Stats of the Day. Mike Giardi of the NFL Network, live from New England and Will Compton, will be here at 12:20. If you want to get involved in what spaces there are to get involved, we welcome that participation. 615-737-1045 is the number. 615-737-1045. So, I guess we have to start with transactions, shall we? Given that they waited basically an hour past the normal time that such transactions come out. Now, NFL teams aren't required to release them at 3 Central time, but typically that's when it comes down. And so you're waiting and you're waiting and you're waiting, and it gets about 3:54 p.m., and then, whoa, half the roster for the Tennessee Titans gets flipped before the holiday weekend. So we'll go through the list. Signed to the active roster are Dontrell Hilliard, which we talked about yesterday, the running back who performed pretty well, about 5 yards to carry for Dontrell against the Texans on Sunday. Defensive back Buster Skrine and John Simon, all three of those go straight to the active roster, which means that somebody's on their way out, or somebody's. Adrian Peterson was waived yesterday. By now, I'm sure you know this. Chris Jackson and wide receiver Marcus Johnson, they went to injured reserve. Now, Kari Blasingame has been designated to return. He remains on IR for the foreseeable future. Signed to the practice squad, running back Rodney Smith, wide receiver Austin Mack, defensive lineman Kevin Strong, and Hendersonville's own wide receiver Golden Tate. So, All of Titans fandom, it seems, that's been clamoring for this dude. I mean, I feel like since 2018, I feel like Titans fans have wanted Golden Tate on their roster in some form or fashion since 2018. And that's probably the last time when Golden Tate was producing at a high level, right? Ended up getting flipped from the Detroit Lions to the New York Giants at the trade deadline. Did he have a stint with the Eagles too? I should probably go through his career transactions. I feel like he's been around. I feel like there was a weird Eagles stint in there for Golden Tate. Maybe I'm making that up. I'll look it up on Pro Football Reference. Regardless, he's on your practice squad now.
No, you did not make that up.
Did he get traded to the Eagles?
In season, 2018.
Okay.
8 games, 278 yards, 1 touchdown.
Buddy, I'm sitting in when the Titans still had a media room, and of course St. Thomas Sports Park has been under construction for like 75 years. At this point, but when last we had a media room, I remember sitting in the media room at the trade deadline and people just screaming on the internet for Golden Tate to the Titans at the deadline or the corpse of Demaryius Thomas, which made zero sense to me because Demaryius Thomas had an equally underwhelming career as a Houston Texan. I think he ended up retiring that very next season, if memory serves, and it's not like Golden Tate did a whole bunch to help the Eagles defend their Super Bowl championship that season, although I do think they ended up making the postseason, 2017, or 2018 rather, feels like an eternity ago. But so now Golden Tate comes in, Marcus Johnson's on IR, your wide receiver depth gets thinner, and to bolster that, you're going to bring some dude in, and he is a dude. At this point in his career, he is a professional wide receiver. Now, to what extent he can help you, I don't have the answer to that question. In fact, I'm interested to see if they even call him up for Sunday's game. I don't think there's any guarantee that that happens at this point. Although if they need the numbers, if they need the bodies there, then they have no choice but to call somebody like Golden Tate up from the practice squad to the active roster. It is not like what they've done at running back, where you're flipping a couple guys through there at this point, because I'm not saying it's easy to plug and play that position, but it is easier to plug and play a running back than it is a wide receiver. I have to tell Titans fans that. You don't want to throw a guy out there at that particular position before he's ready because, yeah, you might have some plays made. Des Fitzpatrick caught his first career touchdown. But then you have a miscommunication on a critical drive in the final minutes of a game that's come down to the wire that, you know, an Anthony Firkser fumble recovery in the end zone has kept you in, basically, and your defense at that point. But Des Fitzpatrick runs the wrong route or miscommunicates with the quarterback. Quarterback throws the third interception of the day, and that is the one that just breaks everybody's backs. That's the one that killed them. So going into a game in New England, I don't know how much juice Golden Tate necessarily is going to have for you and how much you should get worked up about the idea that he's going to play for you on Sunday. I don't think that's a given at this point. Maybe there's enough progress with him this week. I think it's too early to tell on a Wednesday, and given the fact that they won't be in the building on Thursday as they would in any normal week. They held a walkthrough yesterday, and Mike Vrabel met with the media. Tuesday's typically the Titans' off day. So Golden Tate in, Adrian Peterson out. And the question that I've been wondering to myself, and this is kind of where we are watching this team, is who's going to end up being the more productive player for the Titans? Adrian Peterson, who left a lot to be desired, I would say. I think you were trying to figure out solutions that made sense, and I understood on paper why they did it, but this was 27 attempts for 82 yards, 3 yards per attempt. He had the one touchdown in his first game as a Titan at LA. 3 games total, 3 yards per attempt. That is not a sustainable situation for the amount of carries that they were trying to give it to. It's funny. It took 3 games for Adrian Peterson to get even close to what Derrick Henry was averaging per game. Derrick, I believe, when he broke his foot, was averaging 29 attempts, rushing attempts per game, which is a ridiculous amount of work for that position. Adrian Peterson out after just those 3 games. And now they'll have to figure out who the primary running back is, because I think that's what they're best equipped to do. I don't think anybody that's watched them in these 3 games without Derrick is saying to themselves, yeah, you know what, the running back by committee approach, that's working out swell here in Tennessee. That has not proven at all to be the case. Find somebody who is going to be your primary option, and maybe you spell him more than you would Derrick Henry. But it does not need to be, all right, we're going to go seven snaps for Deontay Foreman and we'll give Dontrell Hilliard 9 this week. Or we'll flip it and do the opposite the following week coming off the bye. No, find the running back that's going to be the primary engine to this offense. Because at this point, it's undefined. As is basically the Titans offense without Derrick Henry. Undefined and frankly forcing things. If you go back and watch that game when before A.J. Brown left due to injury in the third quarter, they were forcing a lot of what they were trying to do to A.J. A.J.'s going to make some plays on the ball, to his credit. He is a playmaking wide receiver. But you have one card trick left, basically. And Bill Belichick is super good at sniffing out those kind of card tricks. We'll talk about it with Coach Dave McGinnis of Titans Radio. Coach Mack is going to join us coming up next. Normally, it'd be on a Friday at 12:20. We're doing it on the other side. Buck Rising here with you until 1 o'clock on 104.5 The Zone. Let's do it. Thanksgiving, pre-Thanksgiving edition of a little Mac Talk. Coach Dave McGinnis of Titans Radio joining us a little earlier than he normally does in the week. Happy to have you on, Mac. I hope you're doing well, brother. What's going on?
Doing good. Happy Thanksgiving, Buck and Lucas, and to all of our listeners. Absolutely. Doing fine. Getting here, putting some final touches on our opening for the ball game on Sunday, and then getting ready to go to practice. I'm sure I'll see you at practice.
Indeed you will, and a happy Thanksgiving to you as well, Mac. So I thought it was interesting to kind of go back to that Titans-Texans game quickly. I thought it was interesting what their game plan was offensively, Mac, to try and keep this pass rush that's done so well to keep quarterbacks in check. And not that they didn't necessarily keep Tyrod in check throughout the course of that game, but the fact that they were just not, they were going to get the ball out of his hands as quickly as humanly possible to keep Jeffrey Simmons and Autry and Harold Landry from having a bigger impact than they already did.
Well, that's what he does when you watch it, what David Culley has done with him all along. That's why they had him. That's always been his game, Buck, since he's been in the league. I mean, he's not a cylinder guy to sit back there and hold it for a long time. And they knew that they, you know, having watched what the Titans had been able to produce pressure-wise with four people early on, you knew it was going to come out quick. I mean, everything came out quick. The longest pass they had was the touch pass behind the line of scrimmage.
Right.
You know, they weren't going to let him hold it. And then what happened? You know, with the number of turnovers that they created and that the Titans put up, then all of a sudden now you can sit there and you can hand it off. And you can sit there, and when you're four-man rushing, if any side collapses, I mean, the reason he was taken off running because nobody was open, you know. But they did not do a good job of holding the edge on him, and a couple of times it proved, you know, very detrimental to him because he scored. And so the ball game. First of all, it goes without saying that you can't turn it over five times, and we were very fortunate, really, that there weren't a couple of more, because, you know, there was two fumbles recovered, one for a touchdown, and then one that Ben Jones, you know, recovered that, you know, could have been another, you know, turnover to them. So, you know, I've been in a lot of football games, you know, in my career in the National Football League, and I know that I've never been involved in one as to where the team that I was pulling for and that I was coaching turned the ball over five times and got zero takeaways and was even close to being in the game. It was amazing to me they were still close to being in the game.
No, absolutely. It was again, you know, I think there are some positives to be taken from that performance, even though the turnovers that they did have and the timing of them, you know, whether it's Chester Rogers as far as that punt return is concerned, and you understood kind of what he was trying to do there to clear out the gunner on special teams. But I mean, the defense held the Texans to a total of 7 yards, zero first downs on their last six possessions. They didn't play well enough to win, Mac, ultimately, because they did let Tyrod break contain. But this defense right now is playing at such a high level that I feel like it can continue to keep them in games like this when the offense kind of sputters as it did on Sunday.
Well, but you can't, you know, continue to put your defense, regardless of how they're playing, in those types of situations continually. During the broadcast, I mean, I can count the number of times I said, you know, this is a sudden change situation. And sudden change means when their opposing defense takes the ball away from your offense, and all of a sudden you have to go back in on defense and be able to stem the tide. And so, you know, it all has to go hand in hand, Buck. And of course, what they are going through right now, what we're going through, you know, with the Tennessee Titans is unprecedented as far as injuries. I think it started with the injuries that started to happen during that ball game, on top of the turnovers. I think it started to reach critical mass a little bit. Thus, you saw the 13 transactions, you know, yesterday.
Right.
They're doing everything that they possibly can, you know, in the personnel department and in the coaching department to keep this thing together until we can hopefully, you know, God willing, get some people back. But at the same time, the National Football League train keeps rolling down the track. You've got to be ready to play the next game. And so that's where we are right now. That's the reality of the situation. You've played very well. You've played through some of these injuries. As I said, I think it kind of reached a little bit of a tipping point on Sunday with everything, you know, coming together that ended up not being a good outcome for us at all. And so, you know, then they've got to regroup. That's what they're going to have to do. And it's still going to be from here on out, Buck, as you well know, and so do our listeners. It's a series of 1 week seasons. And, you know, they lost the last one. And so they have to do everything they can to give themselves a chance this Sunday.
Coach Dave McGinnis of Titans Radio is here with us on 104.5 The Zone. We're breaking down the Titans game coming off this past Sunday and, of course, heading up to New England this Sunday. Titans Radio will have your coverage here on 104.5 The Zone. Kickoff at noon Lee Company countdown to kickoff starts at 9 a.m. in live and local coverage. Coach Mack presented by our friends at Farm Bureau Health Plans. Turn to the folks who have been in the game since 1947. Farm Bureau Health Plans offers the great health care coverage you need with a price tag that you can afford. All right, Mack, this is a red-hot Patriots team. The defense is playing at an incredibly high level, and the quarterback is executing exactly what they need him to do. From the standpoint of what they're asking Mac Jones to do at this point, how similar is it going to look to what David Culley and Tyrod Taylor were trying to execute in how quickly the ball comes out and, you know, the average depth of target and things like that being shorter than what's happening, you know, the rest of the across the league?
Well, Josh McDaniels does, you know, a little bit different. He calls the game different. It's a different structure, but it's the same thought process. But Mac Jones has been extremely efficient, and that's what they wanted. I mean, look, they can Bill Belichick, you know, completely refigured this club in the offseason. I mean, major reconfiguration. $160 million in guaranteed money, you know, to go out and get free agents and basically retool this team and then turn it over to a rookie quarterback. And so early on in the season, I've watched every game because I wanted to really dig in and see what was going on. And at one point they were 2-4, you know, and they hadn't quite, you know, put everything. I wouldn't say everything had not quite come together, but it wasn't quite, you know, ginning as smooth as it would be, but you could see it coming. Well, right now, you know, especially in the last month, they've been playing really good football. They've been playing really good complementary football. The thing that I don't want to get lost, because I want our listeners, we always take a deeper dive just talking football when I'm on your show, is they're running the football very well.
Right.
You know, Ramondre Stevenson is, you know, and they split it between two backs, he and Harris, but they're running the football very, very well. They use different personnel groups. On the flip side of it, Buck, when you look at their defense, I mean, it's not very complicated. It's not complicated at all, but it is so sound, and they are playing such physical defense, especially with that solid five-man front. They are setting edges, and they're not allowing people to run the football at all. And they are most of the offenses that they've played. I mean, they completely boat raced the Falcons about 8 days ago, and so the thing that they are doing is they've got all their pieces working. They're fairly healthy at this time, and I think, you know, just the fact that he went out, brought some people back defensively, especially, you know, say Kyle Van Noy that has been with them, added Judon, who's played in a similar type of situation defensively during his career. So what they've done is they've put those pieces together, and they're playing really efficient football right now. And to me, Belichick knew that early on he probably wasn't going to quite be pieced together because of all the different pieces that he brought in. But, I mean, he set this team up. You can see that he set this team up, if he was fortunate enough to keep his health with his football team, you know, for a December run, and that looks like what they're doing.
That's exactly right. Coach Dave McGinnis is here with us on 104.5 The Zone. Mac, one of the players, one of the many players that you guys as a Titans radio staff scouted during your pre-draft preparations and then ultimately the great product that you guys put on the first couple nights of the draft, one of the players was Christian Barmore, who I know prior to the acquisition of Denico Autry, there was some talk of would the Titans be in the market for a defensive tackle of his caliber. What kind of traits does this guy possess, and what's allowing him to be successful in this scheme?
Well, I mean, you know, Buck, you follow the draft too. And Barmore, you know, wasn't a 4-year starter at Alabama. You know, he came on basically, you know, in his last season, and still wasn't a finished product.
Right.
But you could see, I mean, there's a load of talent and a really big body there. And as I say, he's one of the guys that I watched pretty close when I went back and watched all of their games, you know, and just got through with him, in fact, last night. Now that he's starting to really understand the speed of what's going on up there, much like Jeffrey Simmons, you know, had to do when he first came into the National Football League. The speed on the interior is different. This guy's got a lot of ability. Plus, here's what's really helping him, in my opinion, Buck, which doesn't have to always be right, but when I look at it and see, they surrounded him with veteran players. And veteran players, you know, if a guy's got talent and is willing to work on it, the mental aspect of it, and is able to develop during the week in practices and then start trying to put all of those things together in a ball game and then come back and work on what didn't work and start trying to perfect. If you've got veteran pieces around you, that helps you come along a little bit quicker. Right now, I mean, he's playing really good football, and I really don't think he's playing as good of NFL football as he can. I think there's still a bigger ceiling for him.
He's a lot of – I mean, that whole defense is a lot of fun to watch, and Matt Judon has obviously been a big part of what's made them successful and having all the players back, or a lot of the players back that opted out during the 2020 season seems to have gone.
Yeah, Hightower's back. You're right. I mean, that helps. I mean, and that was Bill Belichick's plan. I mean, they had a down year for New England last year, and, you know, he wasn't going to have much more of that.
Yeah, he doesn't strike me as somebody who's satisfied with a down year from time to time. So for the Titans, Mac, the offense, you know, despite the turnovers, and the turnovers are the biggest story from that game, but I thought it was one of their more efficient days, both in the running and passing game. I mean, the interceptions are what people are going to get bogged down in, but, I mean, they were better on third down, 40% against the Texans. They were running the ball at a more efficient clip. Adrian Peterson ends up on the outs at this point, and Dontrell Hilliard seems to have earned that active roster spot. What did you kind of see from the Titans on offense? I don't know if you can subtract the turnovers, but just from an execution standpoint up until those turnovers.
Well, you can't subtract the turnovers because they dictate what goes on afterwards. Because really, seriously, Buck, when you look at the game, and you really start looking at it the way National Football League games go, when you get down 19-0, regardless of how you got down 19-0, all right, let's set that aside. But you're down 19-0 with a quarter and a half left. You're down three scores. You're down three scores. So that dictates a lot of what you're able to do, because you're down three scores, then your run game, you're not going to be able to turn around and hand it off a lot, because here's what you're working on. When you're down three scores, and plus you're having to take into account that they're going to get some more series, you know, because you're down three scores, Buck, doesn't mean you get to do it like make it, take it basketball. If you score, you get it back to you.
Right.
It goes back to them again. So now you're fighting time. You're fighting time, and you're also, you know, you're also fighting series. And so that's what happened, you know, with the run game. The run game early on, they had some nice runs early on, but all of a sudden the run game disappears because you're down three scores, and then you're going to have to. I mean, they did not come into that ball game, you know, wanting to spin it 52 times. They knew it was going to rain too. We all did. They did. They were prepared for that. But that's what necessitated, and that's what was happening. And then, you know, you start losing your pieces out there. And the other thing is, when people know that you are going to have to spin it constantly and that you have to score touchdowns, you're not playing for field position and field goals anymore when you're down three scores, then their defensive front can get in track stances and just bring it constantly, constantly, constantly. You heard me talk a lot about, and so have our listeners, about putting defenses in conflict situations.
Mm-hmm.
Well, their defense was not in a conflict situation, you know, from the middle of the third quarter on. That's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's something the Los Angeles Rams have found out about in the last couple of weeks against the Titans and the 49ers. Mac went with – with that being said, then how similar is that? Because I kind of felt it going the same way in real time as that Arizona Cardinals game did, where they had no choice but to adjust the way that they were going to play that game because of the way that they got down early and because they not quite abandoned the run, but didn't have the luxury of being able to utilize the run the way that they would like to kind of pace their offense the way that the Titans typically do.
Well, the Cardinal game was completely different. Because first of all, you had one guy that got five sacks. You were really getting tsunamied with your rush, and then they hit explosive plays on us. You know what I'm saying? The Cardinals, it was an explosive play game, plus not being able to protect the quarterback. That was entirely different. This ball game, there were no explosive plays in the ball game. I think the longest explosive play was Westbrook Akina,
yeah,
you know, down the middle of the field. The longest play that they had was a tap pass, you know, which is a tap pass is behind the line of scrimmage, push forward that counts as a pass and not a run for 17 yards. So it was entirely different. But what happens, what was not different, to your point, Buck, was the separation of score. separation of score and time mean everything as far as to the tone and timbre of the offense that you could play. That's what happened in both of those games.
So we don't have tape, recent tape of Golden Tate, and he's obviously still on the practice squad at this point. Marcus Johnson goes to IR. His struggles with soft tissue injuries, unfortunate, but they continue to bog him down. And the wide receiver depth has been a week-to-week proposition. Anyway, Mac, I don't know how much Golden Tate you've had the opportunity to watch of late. Is there anything that he can bring to them at this point, other than just another body on the roster, that can give this offense an extra dimension that it needs, or consistency as far as the passing game is concerned?
Yeah, Buck, I always tell the truth, and I don't say things just to say them.
Sure.
You know, when I'm on any of the shows that I'm on, either here or around the country, I haven't seen Golden Tate. I don't know. I mean, I know what he was. You know, I'm very familiar with what he was. I have not seen him lately. So I know at least he's healthy and has got healthy legs at this point, which is what we need. I mean, you know, we were running out of legs in that game on Sunday. And as I say, I'm not going to belabor the point, because Mike Vrabel doesn't and this organization doesn't. I'm not going to. I didn't when I was coaching, but it's the raw facts of it. You've got to get some healthy bodies and numbers out there. And so we'll see him at practice, and you know, he'll get to practice today. He'll get to practice Friday. We'll see. So, but to tell you that I know exactly how he's going to fit or what he can do right now, I can't do that, Buck, because I haven't seen him lately.
Which makes me happy, because that's why people trust your analysis, Mac. You're not just saying stuff to say stuff like talking heads like myself. Coach Dave McGinnis of Titans Radio is our guest here on 104.5 The Zone. So, Mac, with that being said, at New England is a place that this team has gone and won before. Totally different rosters, totally different circumstances, and certainly a different quarterback on the opposing side. The challenges of playing in Foxborough, though, are famous at this point, whether real or imagined, whether locker rooms are actually bugged or it's just Peyton Manning saying that for comedic effect on the Manning cast. How much harder, if at all, is New England to play at?
Well, it's been hard because they've had Bill Belichick and good teams. Here's what makes venues hard, Buck: good teams that you're going into play. Okay, I mean, because basically everything's 100 yards long, right, 53 and a third wide, and so you know, and the fans can't come out of the stands, you know, at you. So all of that stuff. But
those Boston fans might try and come out of the stands at you, though, Mac. I don't know that press box. I hope that's high enough for you.
I've been to Philly a lot in my career, so I know what. Hostile is, but to me, you know, the issue is, you know, talking about going into New England, it's because they've been so good.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have six trophies sitting in their building because they weren't good, and so they've always been good. They've been consistent, and that's what you fight. You know, when you go in there, the Titans, you know, have had some success there lately, but those were different teams for New England. Those were different teams. You know, for the Titans. I mean, the last couple of times we've been there, it's, you know, we've enjoyed getting on the bus after the game. And so this time we're going to have to go in there and completely see what we can put together. And, you know, right now at the point, I mean, this is a game where the winner will still be the number one seed, which right now, you know, look, everybody at this point in the season, especially now with the 17-game season, those 17 games that count, everybody's jockeying for position now in the tournament. If you put yourself in position to be able to get yourself in the tournament, now you start jockeying for positions in the tournament. Some teams have played themselves out of that ability to be able to jockey, for positions. And then they're playing for a lot of other reasons. Well, these two teams are still playing for position, so we'll see.
All right. Coach Mack sounds like he's been looking at that horse racing video that I hear Mike Vrabel likes to show the players about this exact concept at this point in the season. Coach Dave McGinnis will be on the call with Mike Keith, with Amy Wells, with Rhett Bryan, the whole Titans radio crew, live from New England this coming Sunday on 104.5 The Zone. Titans countdown starts at 11, and of course, coverage kickoff at noon Central Time on Titans Radio. Mac, safe travels, happy holidays, and I'll see you in the booth on Sunday.
Buck, happy Thanksgiving. I'll probably see you at practice, and I'll see you in New England.
Yes, sir. Coach Dave McGinnis, kind enough to give us some of his time, courtesy of our friends at Farm Bureau Health Plans. Matt, you know, I understand what he's saying, and I, I, I almost hate asking current or former coaches that kind of question, like, how hard is a particular place to play? Because I know full well it's about the football team as opposed to the environment. But I don't know how many people made the trip, how many people in Nashville or at least in our listening audience, wherever you may be, made that trip in 2019 up to Foxborough for the wild card round, for Tom Brady's last game as a New England Patriot that ended with a Logan Ryan pick six, a little bit of dramatic flair, hands up in the end zone, Titans win, advance to Baltimore. Man, that place is ominous. I should probably keep track of how many NFL stadiums I've been to at this point, because people are more interested in asking me what press box food there is at each stop. But, I mean, New England is, or Foxborough rather, that stadium is an hour Uber ride easy from Boston or Providence, Rhode Island, wherever you're saying, and there's just nothing out there. It just rises out of the ground like this dark spaceship-looking thing, the Death Star of the NFL, resides in Foxborough. It's going to be an interesting game. I'm looking forward to getting up there and seeing how this one plays out. But when we come back, we'll have an SEC stat of the day for you. Lucas Panzeca is prepared well in advance of his normal Friday responsibilities. We'll do that coming up next. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone. This is the answer. I love this song more than I should. I would say I don't like Christmas music. This is my holiday music. Thanksgiving doesn't have a song, does it?
No, not really.
It's a crank it. So good. Welcome back.
That's better than any Christmas song you can show me.
Oh, it's so good. You cannot tell me. Out of here with jingle bells. I don't need a reindeer with a red nose. I need greens. I need beans. I need potatoes. I need tomatoes.
Thanksgiving is just superior in every way.
It's so good. Whoa, just from a holiday standpoint?
Yes.
So we made fun of Will Bowling because I'm sure they did something with the Thanksgiving side dish draft or whatever the case was. I'm not sure how they went about executing their Thanksgiving conversation. But I'm willing to stake my professional career on the idea that Thanksgiving is the best of the holidays.
It's superior.
I will hear nothing of it. You have sports. You have food. You can have family if you want, but if you're not necessarily a family gathering person, you can be like me and just go to a steakhouse and not talk to anybody. It's going to be great.
It's the Fs. It's all the Fs.
Football, family, friends, food.
Fall, too. Weather's better.
Love to see it. The five Fs, all of which you can say on FCC Radio.
Look at that.
What's the SEC stat of the day?
The SEC stat of the day is 64. That is the number of points Tennessee needs over the course of their next two games, Vanderbilt and the bowl game, to set a single season record for points in a season. That would break 484 set in 1993 in year one of Philip Fulmer's tenure as head coach.
Okay, who was the quarterback that season?
Was pre-Peyton Manning. Was that Heath Shuler?
That would have to be right, and now we're going to get fact-checked on this. Sorry, I didn't
right.
know.
Right, it was before I was born, but it was definitely pre-Peyton Manning.
Okay, so from that, I mean, that's pretty impressive. Because, I mean, this was kind of the hope for the Vols under Josh Heupel, right? Better, improved quarterback play and offense, points, scoring, touchdowns. Even if you can't be competitive from a talent standpoint, well, at least you've got a systematic approach that can give you, if you want moral victories, scoring more points than anybody has this season on Georgia. That's not a small deal, even if you ended up, getting blown out and run roughshod over in the second half of that game or against Alabama. Like, you understand where the clear and obvious deficiencies are. But this is kind of the thing for me with Josh Heupel and with Hendon Hooker and with the way that they have kind of designed and executed their plan this season, it's that they have a plan and I can see the plan coming to fruition each and every week. I may take issue with their short yardage play calls. I may take issue with their decision, or rather indecision, to go for it on fourth and one from time to time. But everything else, it is hard for me to criticize what Josh Heupel has done. And I'm critical of everything. So if you're going to make it hard for me to criticize you, you're doing a pretty damn good job.
Huge for recruiting for this staff in the homes of prospects. Look what we did in year one. We literally scored more points in a season than has ever been done at this program. Imagine what we can do with you.
And that's especially in this time, in this space of college football, and really of football in general, when such a premium is put on the skill position players. Look at what's happening around college football right now. Yes, quarterbacks can help put you over the top, but it's, I mean, am I incorrect in saying that it's more about the skill position players you have in college as opposed to your quarterback? Because I feel like you can find ways to mitigate average quarterback play in college football with as much creativity as exists there and how much more space there is as far as the hashes are concerned in college football. I feel like if you have premium skill position players, you can compete. And of course you have to have depth, but that is where the emphasis for teams like Alabama, for teams like LSU, that is where, I mean, Florida, you saw how much more mortal Kyle Trask looks without all of these fire-breathing dragons at wide receiver and tight end that he had last season. This is something, at least from my observation and the way that I kind of talk to scouts about this stuff, that seems to be what they're looking at as far as what separates some of these programs and the level of play, the level of execution, the skill positions.
Well, you still need a quarterback to execute it. Sure. It is a very quarterback-friendly offense, but look at the difference between Joe Milton in the early part of the season and what Hendon Hooker has been able to accomplish.
Yeah, but like, and I'm not doing this to diminish Hendon Hooker, but I think that Joe Milton was such, there are more Joe Miltons than there are Hendon Hookers. Let me not get ahead of myself by saying that, but the execution problem was so blatant with Joe Milton that I feel like you're not going to have that erratic an experience from week to week, because the thing that attracts you to Joe Milton is that there aren't a lot of Joe Miltons, right? Joe Milton is kind of different in what his talent ability is, so much so that it attracts your attention from the larger problem areas, where I'm not saying you can find more Hendon Hookers, but you can find more people who does what Hendon Hooker does well, which is execute efficiency. Don't push it. Take what the defense is giving you and just make sure you keep the tempo. Whereas with Milton, the incompletions that both kill momentum and drives, and, I mean, he wasn't turning the ball over, but just the amount of, I mean, it felt worse almost watching that than if he had thrown interceptions.
Yeah.
Than seeing him just rocket launch 10 yards over a wide receiver's head who's clearly streaking into the end zone for a touchdown.
Well, for quick three and outs in this offense feel like turnovers.
Oh, they're death.
Because they happen in 15, 20 seconds. But you're right. A lot of the offense is designed for run after catch, quick screen game. Play number one at Kentucky, Javonte Payton, 75 yards to the house on a screen pass. So if you can break that record this season, the fact that you're in position to do it, maybe on Saturday, I don't know. They put up 60 on South Alabama last week. I don't know if they could do 64 against an SEC opponent. But between Vanderbilt and the bowl game, that's how many points you are away from breaking that record, 64.
Who do you feel better about, you personally, Lucas, or the audience? 615-737-1045. If you want to jump in on the conversation, of course, you're more than welcome to. And ZW on Zone TV says it was Heath Shuler that was quarterbacking the offense at the time that they had the most points scored in a season in year 1993.
Yeah, year one of Philip Fulmer.
Okay. So, who do you feel better about covering this weekend? Because you got the Vols minus 31 at home. You got the Titans plus 6 if you're looking at your DraftKings Sportsbook app, and you should be. But I think I feel better. I mean, the Titans obviously have a much better percentage chance of covering plus 6, but I don't feel great about Tennessee minus 31. I don't know why I'm like, it's not like I'm high on Vandy. I just think that's such a massive line. That's so big.
It's big. I would lean Titans there, and I don't feel great about either. But honestly, I do tip the cap to Vanderbilt the way they've stuck in and battled for Clark Lee over the last few weeks. To go down, lose by 14 in Oxford against a top 10 team in Ole Miss. They're 1 point shy of beating South Carolina on the road. They lost that game 21-20 against a team that's just beaten Florida and Auburn in back-to-back weeks. They're playing hard for Clark Lee. And believe me, Vanderbilt always gets up for the Tennessee game.
You don't feel good about the Titans plus six.
I don't feel great about the Titans limping into Foxborough with the bye week. It's like the bye week is there. You can almost feel it just reaching out. And then the Patriots just step in front of it.
Then Bill Belichick just cleats you in the hand. Yeah,
Christian
as you're
Barmore just emerges out of the shadows. No.
Oh, God. I'm telling you, I'm dreading this trip for a great many reasons. And we'll tell you why I'm dreading this trip coming up next. We'll also do a condensed version of the dumbest thing in sports this week because we got a jam-packed, loaded show. Mike Giardi of the NFL Network, he's live in New England. He'll join us coming up in the second hour. And, of course, it's a Wednesday, so Will Compton will be here. And I heard that he was repping Nashville SC at Nissan Stadium last night. Apparently, he's our new soccer correspondent.
Easy.
A lot more coming up next.